It's November 8, 2021. This is Golf Today. You can call him the man of Mayakoba, the king of the cave, the most technologically savvy of all the worldwide technology champions. Or you can call him Victor, which is plenty good enough. The 24-year-old shot 23 under, and we dive deep on his second straight victory at Mayakoba. Plus, in a year where we've seen plenty of comebacks, the most consistent might belong to Lydia Ko. Another victory on Sunday, this time on the LET. What does this mean for Lydia in terms of her season, her career, the Hall of Fame, and plenty more? Paige McKenzie joins. Alan Bratton, the head golf coach at Oklahoma State, also joined to discuss what Victor Hovland was able to accomplish, the new age recruiting process, and what it's like having all those trophies on the wall. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome to Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Shane Bacon. Hope everyone is enjoying their Monday. I know Victor Hovland enjoyed his Sunday.
And, you know, we are negative at this time of year in the golf world, so can I speak positively about the fall part of this PGA Tour season, if you will, the wraparound season? You know, this is a chance for two types of players to really make hay. And these are either the players that are stars but not yet superstars, or these are the young players just looking for solid starts. You know, if you dive into the OWGR website and you look at strength of field, the Open, the U.S. Open, is at 790 by their calculations. You know, these events, worldwide technology at Mayakoba is a 363. Butterfield Bermuda was a 68. Zozo was a 225. They're lesser in terms of the strength of field, but you still have the opportunity to go out there, compete, and win. And what we've seen from Victor Hovland, I know we're going to get into Hovland in just a second, but what we've seen from Victor Hovland kind of reminds me of Justin Thomas. You remember Justin Thomas turning professional, and where he started to get his comfort level in terms of winning was at the CIMB. You think about winning that first one, he wins the second CIMB, and that's the first of five wins in his biggest season of his career. And I also look at Jimmy Walker. You know, Jimmy Walker won the first ever fall series event. He went on to win six times in a three-year span, including a major championship. He beat Brooks Koepka in that Fry's event. Koepka had a two-shot lead back in 2013. There are opportunity at this portion of the calendar. While a focus might be on football and NBA and hockey and World Series, there is such a great opportunity for these pro golfers, like we saw on Sunday from Victor Hovland, to go out there and do something.
Always something to play for. Very important to win. Very important time of year. We've seen the best players in the world, like Rory McIlroy, kind of put it out there. I need to play in the fall. I don't want to start the 2022 season or start a new year, a new calendar year, chasing FedEx Cup points, being 50th in the FedEx Cup standings or 100th. Before the new year, before the calendar even changes, very important win for Victor Hovland.
Yeah, the fields might not be as deep as you see during maybe the spring or the summer.
But they're getting
deeper. Are really, really competitive. And this week, especially the case. Let's get into Victor Hovland and what he was able to do at the Worldwide Technology at Mayakoba. The ball striking, D. I mean, it's just out of this world right now.
Yeah, I was watching this last night. The par 5, 7th hole, hits a wedge, close. Birdie gets the 21 under. At this point, it's a 4-shot lead, absolutely cruising.
Here at the 9th, talk about the driving and the iron play. And we know Victor Hovland's one of those talents that when the putter is hot, he has a chance to contend and potentially win. That one got his lead up to 4.
Yeah, he's working on a new nickname, maybe the man of Mayakoba or El Hombre de Mayakoba. This is the 11th hole. Another look for Birdie going to become a back-to-back winner in Mayakoba.
Go to 17. Not a lot of stress on this Sunday for Victor Hovland. Had some stresses earlier in the week. A broken driver. Had a ball in the second round bounce off a sprinkler head and go into the penalty area. There was no stress on Sunday for this guy. It was just fairway, green, putt. What's my lead?
The only question was going to be, what's the amount? What's the amount of victory? What's the margin of victory for this 24-year-old from Norway? Gets it done. A 4-shot victory. We've been raving about the ball striking of Victor Hovland. This is from Kyle Porter from CBS Sports. Among the top 10 ball strikers in the strokes gained era, Victor Hovland only trails Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. Oh, so that's how well he hits a golf ball.
Yeah, I mean, just look at these strokes gained numbers. And we're leaving off the wraparound season. You know, we haven't had a lot of events in 2021, 2022. But you look, last season, strokes gained off the tee, 5th, 15th in approach. So you're talking about a great driver who is one of the best iron players on tour, 19th, 18th off the tee, 7th in strokes gained approach to green. And there's been a lot of talk about Victor Hovland's short game in and around the greens, not necessarily on the surfaces. But when you're one of the best drivers on the PGA Tour and one of the best iron players on the PGA Tour, I mean, Jack Nicklaus was not a great chipper of the golf ball. Tiger Woods had his ups and downs in terms of where he landed on the PGA Tour and strokes gained around the greens. We know some of the magic that Tiger pulled out, but he had some mediocre, easy pitch shots. When you hit it like these guys hit it, you don't have to be an exceptional chipper of the golf ball.
But you want to be solid. You want to improve. And we're watching kind of this journey unfolding in Victor Hovland's short game. I want to go back to 2020 in Puerto Rico and listen to Victor Hovland describe the state of his short game.
I just suck at chipping. I definitely need to work on my short game, and I was 100% exposed there on that hole. I can get away with it sometimes, but over 72 holes, I really need to tighten that up. Fortunately, I was able to make it back with the chips on 10 and 15.
So he said he sucks at chipping, going on to victory in Puerto Rico. Now let's listen to Victor describe the state of his short game after winning Sunday at Mayakoba.
We talked before the start of tournament play about what you would need to do with your game to take that next step into maybe the top five, top three in the world. You said the emphasis was short game. What type of step do you feel you made this week?
Yeah, I think throughout the week I've been chipping it so good, making so many up and downs, and it just really puts a lot of pressure off your long game. Hit a couple bad chips today. It's still a work in progress, but I've made some big strides, and I hope I can continue that way.
From I suck at chipping to I've been chipping it really good this week. He's never going to be Jordan Spieth or Seve Ballesteros or Phil Mickelson around the green. But if he can make marginal improvement and feel like he's a better player around the greens than he has been, that's got to be quite a weapon for a player whose ball striking is superb.
Yeah, on Saturday after his round, he said, I chipped it nasty today. I love that line from Victor Hovland. I chipped it nasty. And I'm going to dive back into the chipping as a PGA Tour professional, because when you drive it as good as he does and you hit his irons as good as Victor Hovland does, chipping is the least important skill for a professional golfer. And let me explain. If you had an EA Sports game right now and you were going to build the best pro golfer and you had 100 points to spread out across your player, you'd put a lot in power and distance off the tee. You'd put a lot in iron play. When you talk about dominant players of this era, I look at Jordan Spieth, I look at Colin Morikawa, I look at Justin Thomas, you look at John Rahm, you look at Dustin Johnson, all these players have one thing in common. They're very, very good iron players. You'd put some in putting as well, D. We know you got to get the ball in the hole. And for certain players, when they're not great putters historically, when the putter gets hot, they win golf tournaments. I always think about Colin Morikawa when I think like that. But for his career, Victor Hovland's hit 70% of his greens in regulation. So you think about that. He's hitting 70% of the greens. You have to hit a driver. You have to hit a tee ball 78% of the time if you're a professional golfer, you know, roughly, and when you include the par threes. You have to putt on every hole.
Yes.
Every hole you have to putt unless you're chipping in. And you have to hit an iron on basically every hole, but you're talking about 30% of the time he has to chip. Let's call it 33% of the time with par fives in and around the green. It isn't the most important skill. Now, it's important to improve on a skill that you're lacking in, but to be a bad chipper of all of the skills, off the tee, iron play, putting, mental, everything, chipping is the least important for a current PGA Tour player. So when Victor Hovland improves just a little bit, slightly improves this part of his game, he's going to get consistently near the leaderboard, near the lead, and have a chance to win golf tournaments. And that's what we saw this week. And it's interesting, though, to think about chipping, because we've always thought about it as a way to kind of keep those rounds going.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing these players that it's not the most important thing. And I would say it's the least important thing for great players.
He's a proven PGA Tour winner, and he has improved marginally, as he said. But the question to me is, can he win a major championship? He does not even have a top 10 in major championships so far. So you're looking at a player who's going to be competing at Augusta National. Can he, you know, improve his short game enough to compete for the biggest trophies, where some players are looking for a quarter shot around? They're looking to get up and down one or two more times, because the stresses of major championship golf, let's be honest, they're different than week-to-week PGA Tour golf, where it's all about the golf course is set up for scoring and hitting at 350 yards. When the margins of error are smaller and smaller, when you have to get up and down from tight lies in the biggest events of the year, that's going to be very fascinating to see what he has. Can he be a Vijay Singh who, you know, ball struck his way to most of his major championships? Or can he get his short game to improvement and pour to a point where not necessarily a strength, but it allows him to put on a green jacket or to win a claret jug, to win the biggest tournaments of the year?
You know, I've seen the no top 10 in the major thing floating
Zero.
Around a bit about yeah. Victor Hovland. Well, he's never missed a cut in a major either. And okay. he's got a couple of T12s and T13s in U.S. Opens, and he has a T13 and Open Championship as well. He's been consistent in majors. The WD coming this year at the U.S. Open when he got sand in his eye. But this is a guy that was low am in his two opportunities yes. to be low am in major championships. And he plays well in the tougher, if you will, conditioned major championships, the U.S. Open and the Open. But, yeah, I mean, you think about Augusta National, and to win in and around Augusta, yeah. I actually think there's more emphasis at times on the pitching than there is in the putting. I think it's so sure. tough to putt greens at Augusta National that it almost levels the playing field. You think about Adam Scott and Sergio Garcia as some quote-unquote bad putters on the PGA Tour that have won green jackets. For Hovland, I think if that does continue to improve. And, again, this isn't to go from 170 to 50th on the PGA
right.
Tour. You go from 170th to 145th. That's really all you need when you're Hovland. But, to start getting himself more consistently in contention at the big events, you're going to have to really focus on parts of the game that you struggle in. But it seems like that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And when you start to go from I suck at chipping to I'm chipping nasty,
yeah.
now you've completely flipped the script.
Just want to see what happens when he is head-to-head on a back nine on Sunday against a player like a Jon Rahm or a Jordan Spieth with a sublime short game. But a big Sunday for Victor Hovland, who, really interesting, that has kind of two different Mayakoba trophies. Did you notice
you see
that?
This? Yeah.
It's strange. So kind of the trophy is evolving as well. So this was 2020. Kind of looks like the color of sand, maybe the beaches of Mayakoba.
Yeah, I mean, that looks like an office trophy, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you throw in the office. So right behind you. Oh, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Now that's front of the house. Right when you walk in.
It's beautiful. It says Mexico, you know, new title sponsor this year. I don't know if that's the reason why, but I actually like the trophy on the right more than the kind of colorless one.
I'm into both of them, but I'm with you. I'm into the 2021 version of this trophy. Good news, Victor Hovland, he just argued with himself about which one.
Yeah,
better.
Absolutely. Were there some other winners who didn't win over the week in Mayakoba? I know you have some ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with Andrew Landry. Had a really, really solid week. You see, 15 under par. I mean, this is a guy that struggled mightily last season. He had a good finish at the RSM in November. He finished in a tie for fourth. After that, not great. 10 missed cuts in 18 events. His best finish, a tie for 26th. This is his second top seven finish in four events in the wraparound season. You talk about a guy that needed something. Mm. This year, Landry is doing that. Great week for Andrew Landry.
Yeah, and he also did this.
Did you see?
Well, I mean,
no.
Out there.
I would have thrown it about 8 seconds before he threw it.
Right?
Get rid of that.
Bananas?
What are you doing? It's like a quarterback. Don't hold on to the ball.
You got
to get rid of it.
Throw it
away.
Absolutely.
Save a possession.
Made me a little nervous.
What about you? You got a winner that didn't win.
I'm going with Carlos Ortiz, who now has two runner-up finishes in his last three starts at Mayakoba. Final round of 66. The home crowd was really in his corner. And he talked about dealing with the pressure of a home game. He's had conversations with Abraham Ancer, who played alongside Tiger Woods at the WGC event in Mexico, and kind of talked about, you know, using the support as a positive and not feeling pressure. And Carlos Ortiz has said he is better and better at doing that. I think this week was a prime example of that. And now he goes to Houston, where he's a defending champ.
Mayakoba, a great event. By the way,
great
viewing. Had a lot of big names. My uncle was texting me. He said, this feels like, you know, a mid-season leaderboard.
JT in the mix.
Yeah, you had that kind of top five
of
really, really the who's who. Good event. Let's take a look at the Comcast business.
Sure.
Top 10, if you will.
Let's do that.
See who has shifted and moved their way into the top 10 of the Comcast business. Sam Bird's leading. Sungjae there, Hideki. You see Victor Hovland moved up 89 spots.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you win.
These are the players taking advantage of the fall portion of the PGA Tour schedule. And the PGA Tour, in fact, announced today a new event in Mexico. The 2022 Mexico Open will replace what was formerly known as the Mexico Open. Mexico Championship dates back to 1944 and is considered Mexico's national championship. Will appear on the PGA Tour schedule for the first time as an official FedEx Cup event, offering 500 FedEx Cup points to the winner.
That is a great, great move. Way to go, PGA Tour. Need more national championships in the fold in terms of pro golf. We talk PGA Tour. We talk Victor Hovland. Let's talk Lydia Ko, a winner on Sunday as well.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Lydia Ko shot a final round 65 at the Aramco Saudi Ladies International on the Ladies European Tour just one day after tying the course record. She finished at 23 under for a five-shot victory. How nice to see her back playing well. This is the par 4 10th hole, her second.
Dialed. Lydia's been dialed most of the season. And Lydia Ko is one of those players that golf needs to be playing well, needs to be contending in these events, needs to be a worldwide phenomenon as she was when she came out really on tour.
Fitting the theme of 2021, the comeback after a long stretch of darkness. You bring so much light to the game, so much grace.
Hey, you said 65 in the final round.
Yeah.
So she shoots 62 in the final round of the A&A this year. She shoots 65 on her way to victory at the Lotte. In the final round, mind you, 63, Dow Great Lakes Invitational. Final round, Women's Scottish Open, 63 in the final round. Just get Lydia Ko to Sunday.
I think we're describing a closer, is what we're describing, and potentially someone on her way to the LPGA Hall of Fame. She has 19 points now. You need 27 to get into one of the hardest Hall of Fames in sports, maybe the hallest. You see that the points are awarded as follows. 1 point for an official LPGA tournament win, so she did not get one in Saudi Arabia. 2 points for a major championship. 1 point for the Vare Trophy or the Rolex Player of the Year. It is hard to get in, but Lydia seems to be on her way after this fantastic season that she's putting together.
Got a really good chance at the Vare Trophy, and we're going to actually dive deeper into this tomorrow because it's a lengthy discussion to be had. But I feel like today we should give some love to what Lydia Ko has done this season. There's been a lot of players that have broke back out, if you will. I mean, you think about Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Hideki, Brooke Henderson. There's a long list of players that have had a great 2021. Lydia Ko's not just winning, but it's been consistent as well. Eighth top five worldwide in 2021 for Lydia Ko. So when you're diving into, are you truly back? Are you really back to playing the golf that we saw earlier in his career? The answer is absolutely yes. And, I mean, diving into those final rounds, this is a player that it plays her best on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, you play your best golf on Sunday, and you're already one of the best players in the world. The trophies are going to continue to flow in.
I'm so glad that she's with Sean Foley, who seems to be getting kind of the best out of Lydia again. And that's not just the grace around the greens, but also being a more powerful player, being an athletic player. And it was tough to watch Lydia Ko kind of suffer through some dark months and years now. She said she would go on Instagram and she kind of like apologized, almost saying, you know, I'm keeping my chin up, you know, thanks to the tournament officials for putting the course together. But you could see that she was hurting. You could see that the fans wanted more, that she wanted more from her game. There had been so much turbulence, new coaches, new equipment, new caddies. It seems that right now Lydia Ko has some peace in her camp and some peace with her game as well.
Yeah, just not as loud, right? I mean, turn the volume down sometimes as a professional golfer. You think about how busy their lives are and how often they're moving around and talking to new people and hearing new theories about what you need to be working on. I mean, people don't understand how often professional golfers get approached by the next thing that'll work for you. And if you're a professional golfer struggling, then that comes more and more. I mean, people approach you about a new swing training aid, a new way to swing, telling you what you're doing wrong, telling you what you're doing right. It can be very, very loud in the head of a pro golfer when things aren't going well. For Lydia Ko right now, it seems quiet in that headspace. And when it's quiet for Lydia Ko, we know what she can do. I mean, this is a player, a rare player, that has the ability to win 4, 5, 6, 7 times in a full season. That's the talent. That's the entire, you know, you talk about a five-tool athlete. I mean, Lydia Ko is five tools. So for her, everything seems simpler and calmer now. And in golf, that is the key to success.
I think she's extremely important to the game as well. You talk about the Korda sisters and Michelle Wee. I put Lydia Ko right behind them, and perhaps when she's playing well, right alongside them, because of what she did as a young teenager, turning pro young, winning so early, winning major championships, and playing with such grace and in an era of time that can be mean. I mean, she's a super nice and also a wonderful player. I think she's as important to the game, as important to the LPGA Tour, as any player on the LPGA Tour.
I agree with you, and we're in agreement.
Yes.
Let's see what Paige McKenzie thinks on the subject. We'll welcome Paige in now on this Monday. And Paige, I'd love to get your thoughts on Lydia Ko, not just the win this weekend, but what Lydia Ko's looked like in 2021.
I think you can actually trace it back to the beginning of 2020 after the COVID pandemic. That is when, as Damon pointed out, she started working with Sean Foley. And as a player, listen, I love to give credit to the players because they're ultimately the ones out there hitting the golf shots. But without Sean Foley, I don't know if we would have seen the resurgence that we did with Lydia Ko. And it hasn't been simple or easy. If you remember, in the second event back from the COVID shutdown, Lydia Ko had a 5-shot lead with 6 holes to play ended up double bogeying the last hole and gave the tournament to Danielle Kang. So it was not a straight line forward from where Lydia Ko was, ranked as low as 55th in the world a couple of years ago at that moment, to now, where she's fifth in the world, the best world ranking that she's had in 4 years. It's not been an easy road. She's had bumps along the way, but as you both have pointed out, she's incredibly classy, has incredible grace. Through all of that, that has been so public, it's been impressive to watch her continue to grow and get better and actually kind of get back to the roots of who she was when she was so dominant.
There has been the turbulence. There has been, in some ways, Paige, I would say, a loss of innocence. She kind of knows how the sausage is made now. That said, you know, she's been a former world number one. She has been the best player in the world. Can she be the best player in the world in the era of Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko, in your mind?
I think so, because I don't feel like the women's game has been completely overtaken with distance. I still believe, because of the way that the rough is and the length of the golf courses that the players play, you still need to hit some fairways in order to continue to score. It's not just about hit it as far as you can and move from there. Lydia Ko has also gotten quite a bit longer than when she was dominant. She has gained a good bit of distance off of the tee and gotten stronger. So I think she can, in her new game, compete against the best players in the world. She's got such an incredible golf IQ. She's a savant when it comes to playing. And Damon, you pointed out the innocence is lost. We often had compared her to Jordan Spieth, or I, in my own mind, had compared her to Yanni Sen, a very dominant number one that fell off the pedestal. When Yanni Sen was asked a couple years after she lost her number one world ranking about it, she said, "I didn't know what got me there. So when I lost it, I didn't know how to get it back." And I feel like Lydia Ko has been through the same kind of thing, where she lost trust in what got her there. Whether it was Sean Foley or her own inward finding out, she is trusting herself again, and it's very obvious. So I think for that reason, I expect that she will continue to stay as one of the best players in the world for the next little while.
Well, Lydia Ko trying to win the Vair for the first time for scoring. We're going to get into the nuances of the LPGA rules tomorrow. But what are the rules doing to this young player named Stephanie Meadow and what it pertains to this week on the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, all the tours had challenges in 2020 deciding how they were going to go about figuring out that year and that season. And one of the things that the LPGA Tour did is that they allowed all the players to play. They played for the money, they played for the points, but they didn't play for status. Stephanie Meadow had a third place finish at this week's Pelican Golf Championship last year, and that led to a 55th place on the CME points list last season. Unfortunately, that career high finish is not transferable to the status that she holds this season. So she reverts back to her 2019 status, which meant she was on the outside looking in on the field list to get into this week. She has been given a sponsor invite to play, which is great news. Number one, because she has great experience at this golf course and likely wanted to give it a go again this season. Also, very important, because this is the last full field event before the CME Group Tour Championship. Only 60 players will advance. So it will be the last chance that players have to qualify for next year's status. And Stephanie Meadow sits 101 on the CME points list, top 100 secure their LPGA Tour card. So she's looking to at least make the cut to give herself the opportunity to have good status for next year on the LPGA Tour.
Stephanie Meadow trying to make the weekend. Paige, appreciate the insight. We'll check back with you in just a bit on some of our bets from the weekend. But coming up, a Jacksonville Jaguar kicker, he struggled. He struggled on Sunday. Did you see this? Three straight misses left. It got us thinking of some moments in golf that just simply went wrong. Could go left, could go right. Definitely didn't go straight. We'll be right back. Back on golf today. Don't be confused. I know it's an NFL stadium. We are going to be talking about golf in a bit, but we're going to start with football. This was Jaguars kicker Matthew Wright. It was a crazy day yesterday. So he missed three kicks in a row. His first attempt was 42 yards. He missed it, but there was a false start. So they had a re-kick now from 47 yards. Buffalo got called for running into the kicker on that one. So he got another attempt at 42 yards. He missed all three left. Left, left, left. Now, if about a yard left of the goalpost was the goal,
yes,
he'd have been perfect.
They still beat the Bills. I'm still trying to figure out how they won the game.
It was a game they need to burn the tape of that game and never show it to anybody ever again.
All right, let's talk a little golf gone wrong. There's been a lot of golf gone wrong throughout the history of this game. 1986 Masters, Greg Norman, birdie wins, par ties, Jack Nicklaus at 46. Instead, Greg hits a 4-iron, flares it to the right. He said he should have hit 5. He kind of leaned off the 4, should have hit an aggressive 5, makes bogey. Never won the Masters.
You know, that remember when Spieth won the Masters? Remember we hit it up there on Saturday?
Yeah,
like, is this
the
Norman spot? And then he gets it up and down, saves par. We'll go to 1999. It's kind of a dealer's choice here of which decision you want to pick. We're going to go with the 2-iron.
Yeah.
Vandeveld, and then he chops it to burn. I really have a hard time watching this one.
Vandeveld not partying like it was 1999.
No. Well, it depends on how he thought of Y2K. This was kind of if the computers would have crashed situation here.
No question about it. Though I loved his up and down percent.
Yeah, it was a really, really, really good one. This is 03. This is Rural St. George's. Bjorn in the bunker at the 16th. Bjorn's bunker.
I
just got to get it out.
I hated this. I watched this on TV.
You gotta get it out.
Hurt. This is 3 from the bunker. This was his open.
There's a lot of majors that you feel like belong to another player. You think about Kenny Perry. You think about Thomas Bjorn. It would be a double bogey for Bjorn there in 03.
Hello, Ben Curtis.
Matthew Wright understands it. We'll go to 06 U.S. Open. And D, this was left of the world.
Yes, unearthed the famous quote, "I am such an idiot." Drive off the 10. Only hit 2 fairways all day at Wingfoot West.
Credit to Phil Mickelson for only hitting 2 fairways all day and having a legit chance at par on the last for U.S. Open trophy, by the way.
Great point. I walked out of the press center thinking I'd see Phil win 3 majors in a row. Was not to be. This is 1 year later, the Open. Sergio Garcia for par to win the Open.
So this was like Matthew Wright. See how it was just left. But it was left. That was goalpost, right?
That was goalpost. One of the great reactions of just disbelief. You lose in the playoff, of course, to Patty Harrington. This, the 2011 Masters.
Oh.
Young Rory, left Rory.
Never great when most golf fans went, wait, there's cabins over there?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was cabins left at 10.
Yeah, that was tree trouble, as they call it. 4-shot lead, 43 on the back, shoots 80.
Hey, he won the next major, though.
He sure did.
Shout out to Rory.
IK Kim is now the Chevron Championship. They're saying 10 inches, 12 inches, 14 inches. I mean, this was a short putt.
That putt was a disaster. Jim Furyk at Olympic, also a bit of a disaster. And we're talking about left misses. Just watch the ball fly to this thing.
Yeah, watch the 3 went over his back. He knew right away. Boxes moved up 100 yards. Jim said later, "I was unprepared and didn't know exactly where to hit the ball off the tee." Bogeyed 16, bogeyed 18. Webb Simpson wins the national championship.
And finally, y'all know it, 2016, Jordan Spieth looking for a second straight green jacket, and then he got to the 12th. And it would be a quadruple bogey. And I wrote a piece on this. I was with Fox Sports at the time. I wrote a piece the next year about this. You got to give Jordan Spieth a lot of love for what he did immediately after this situation, because he birdied 13.
Yes.
He birdied 15. He flagged it on 16, if you remember, right over the top of that flag stick. And gave himself at least a chance there. But, yeah, all of it fell apart there at 12 for Spieth.
That was uncomfortable television watching that.
Do you have a worse shot you have ever hit? You, Damon Hack, have ever hit that comes to mind?
The 2013 U.S. Open.
Oh, you were in the U.S.?
I was not in the field, but I got to play one of the holes, 18.
Yes.
In the preamble to the national championship. And Phil Mickelson had been on the course all day playing his own practice round. And at one point, you know, it rained that week quite a bit. And I'm in a golf cart, and I'm slamming on the accelerator, and the wheels are spinning, and I'm making a mess of the golf course. And Phil, of course, is nothing subtle. "Damon, what are you doing?" As loud as he could. And I'm, like, embarrassed trying to drive away. Anyway, I digress. Phil is in the group in front of me. I drop a ball at the Hogan plaque.
Right.
Try and hit a 4-iron, 200-plus yards, and I yank it left of the green, onto the practice green, nearly hitting the clubhouse. And who's watching from behind the green? Phil Mickelson. Didn't even say anything. Just, you know, as soon as I hit my shot, walked back onto the green, hit his putt. I went up to him later, sheepish. It was so embarrassing. That's why I didn't play in the U.S. Open. That's why I'm a sports writer slash broadcaster. It was very embarrassing.
I think my worst golf shot slash decision happened this year. I think it happened in 2021. I was playing a U.S. Open local qualifying here in the Northeast for the first time, and I was kind of – I looked like I might get through. I would one over at the turn, or excuse me, one under at the turn. I hit a 3-wood on the 14th tee, kind of popped it up. It was a terrible decision. I left my push cart about 150 yards in front of the tee box. I didn't realize that we were
bring
playing
it back to
we
you.
Did,
yeah.
There was a new tee box back there. I thought it was a 3-wood. It was a driver.
Jim Furyk.
Tried to smash it.
Bad decision.
It was a bad decision, and it was an awful golf swing. And I didn't miss out by much. I think I made double on that hole, and if I make par there, I'm right around the number. So that was – that was probably it for me.
How about the clear-eyed examination of Jim Furyk? This is one of the most prepared athletes to ever put 14 clubs in a bag. And for him to say, I was unprepared for the tee shot, the USGA kind of got the better of him at that moment. I know to this day, it's a heartbreaking loss for him. I remember speaking to him. I was working for Sports Illustrated after the round, and he talked about the fact that he just wasn't prepared for that tee shot. And you don't see Jim Furyk, you know, miss a fairway by that amount, but you don't see him unprepared for a shot very often.
That tee shot started going left before he took the club back. I mean, that was just not being comfortable in any capacity on the tee box there, and you could see it with the golf swing. Mm. Well, you know, we've let the world into our bad golf shots, if you will. Let's ask everybody out there, what is the single worst golf shot that you've ever hit in your life? And what was the scenario? We need club, we need wind, we need what you did, what you made on the hole. Best responses, we're going to bring those up later in the show.
We apologize in advance for making you relive.
But we will enjoy it as well.
We'll wallow in pity, all of us.
We're back on golf today. Victor Hovland locked up a repeat win at Mayakoba on Sunday, his third career win on the PGA Tour, and he got an updated trophy. That's a beautiful piece of art. I'm into it.
Love the trophy. The white one was okay. I like the colorful little green in there, some blue, and some red as well. Back-to-back Mayakoba for Victor Hovland. Time now, though, for memorable moments presented by Amica Insurance. Say, let's flash back to 2018. Oklahoma State Cowboys, I mean, they won the program's 11th national championship. 11?
11?
So I've been to Stillwater. I've seen the trophies.
They just have them all over the town, or what? Where do you put them if you got 11?
You walk into the golf office, like, yeah, I'd like to go there. There you see Hovland and Matt Wolf's two standouts on the team. Yeah, Hoystead.
So that you hold up one, and then you got to stand by someone else to hold up one, so then you get to 11, right? That's how that works?
Well, they work out.
Okay.
The team is strong.
Just notable players. These are just some of the notable players. If you're not on this list, we respect you and we appreciate you. Ricky Fowler, notable. Victor Hovland, Charles Howell, Hunter Mahan. I mean, this is incredible, this program.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob May, Alex Noren, Bob Tway, Uline, Verplank.
May and Tway. Tway and May.
We got all Americans that rhyme. That's how many superstars they have.
And some names that were left out. I mean, you could do two or three pages of notables from Oklahoma State. And the coach of Oklahoma State, Alan Bratton, joins us on this Monday. It's good to see you, man. What's it like for you watching one of your former players, Victor Hovland, climb the heights of the pro game?
Yeah, that's been a thrill watching him. It's great that he's still around here, too. So we get to talk to him regularly, get him to deliver messages to our team of what it's like out there, which is powerful. It's powerful for our kids to see that they're not that far away. And like you guys were just saying a little while ago, I keep reminding them that all those guys aren't going away. Victor and all the other good young players you guys were talking about aren't going anywhere. So our guys need to bust it every day so that they get to do the same thing.
Alan, you've seen so many incredible players come through your program. Is there an it factor? Is there something that you see early in their careers, even through recruiting, that maybe hints at the idea or the fact that they could turn out to be a great pro?
I think there is, but I don't know how you would really describe it. We're looking for it all the time, and it's rare, but it's a beautiful thing when you find it. Someone comes in, embraces what you're trying to do in the program, and they get better, and they go on to do things like what Matt and Victor and Taylor and a lot of our young guys are doing out there. So you're always searching for that, and you know it when you see it.
Alan, I'm so interested in recruiting these days versus what it used to look like. What's been the single biggest change to recruiting over the last decade or so?
I think the biggest change is that there's lots of schools working hard at golf. The caliber of golf coach has improved. Schools have recognized what an impact a golf program can have on a university. They're paying their golf coaches. So there's lots of guys that are good coaches. They're working hard. And you've got to do that much extra to try to separate yourself from other programs. It's easier to identify players with technology, the internet, and there's so many tournaments for kids to play in now. There's players all over the place. And the global part of the game, more countries are recognizing the value of sending their players to play college golf. So, it's harder to separate. But fortunately, we've got a passionate alumni and great support. And hopefully we're continuing to separate ourselves from everyone else.
How much has technology played into the way you look at young players that you're hoping might come to Oklahoma State in terms of TrackMan and what they're able to send you with what they can do with a golf ball and a golf club and speed and numbers and distance? How much has technology changed the way you look at young players?
Yeah, I mean, it gives you some objective numbers to look at. I still like to go watch a kid play. I'm not going to sign anyone that we don't get out there and get to go watch play. I love to see their demeanor on the golf course, how they shape shots around the green. But absolutely, when you can't do that, and through COVID, we kind of had to do that a little bit more, you can get some objective numbers. And then the more technology I was referring to is just being able to identify players and track scores and keep track of results all over the world.
Alan, I went to Stillwater a decade ago, as you know, to do a story on Peter Uihlein for Sports Illustrated. You walk into that office, and it's just like your eyes get big. How much of a calling card in your mind for recruiting is the program's history when you're competing against schools from Westwood and Malibu and Austin, for example?
Yeah, I mean, we have to capitalize on what we offer, and hopefully those things get kids' attention. It certainly gets the right kids for us, gets their attention. The fact that players have been able to come in here, and if they were top players coming in, they leave top players, and if they maybe are a little under the radar, we've been able to develop guys in the competitive environment that we've got. So our players get better, and when we get the right group of kids, we get to put a bunch of trophies on the wall. So hopefully those things impact them, and they want to know what it is that makes this place go. It's not always the most comfortable place to be. We get a variety of weather. It's a small town, a great college town, but not tons of extracurricular things to do. But we've got everything you need if you want to be a champion golfer, and that's the kind of kids we want to attract.
You mentioned Victor still living in Stillwater. How much impact does he have on the program in terms of working out at the gym, playing Carson Creek with some of the players? Like, how much is he still a part of the program?
He's a huge part, and that's been a significant factor over the last couple of years for him to back up the messages from the coaching staff. Donnie Darr and I, you round your guys up after a round and talk about the things they can improve on. And Victor plays a lot with our guys, and he's able to tell them, a couple of years ago, he might have been wondering if the two old guys knew what they were talking about. Now that he's been out there a couple of years, he can back us up and deliver that message. And again, it's powerful for our kids to see that it's not that far away. He's only a few years removed from college. So that really empowers them to dream, think, and work, and believe that they can do the same kind of stuff.
Alan, there's some tough golf courses all over the country, and then there's Carson Creek. What's it like for freshmen there? And I've heard stories about freshmen getting the Stillwater, and they get on Carson Creek, and it may take them about a year or so before they feel comfortable, if comfortable is even the right word. But what kind of a test is it for young players in particular at Oklahoma State?
It's still a really good test. It's not as difficult as it was when we opened the course. Ball goes farther now, ball goes straighter now, but it's still a very good test and puts demands on all parts of your game. And you mentioned being uncomfortable. That's one of the real beauties of Carson Creek is it never lets up. Every hole holds you accountable to a big miss or getting above the hole, all those kind of things. So, and then when the wind kicks up or you have inclement weather, all of that adds to learning how to play well when you are uncomfortable. And that's been a big part of the development of our players.
Alan, I want to take you back to 2001, 2002, if you will. It was a young lefty from East Texas that thought his game might have been better than it was. I just want to ask you, this is the reply I got from an assistant coach there at Oklahoma State about my inquiry into maybe playing for the team. Where is assistant coach handwritten letter in terms of ranking on no, you're not going to play for us? Is that fourth or fifth on the list of replies? Is that how that goes?
Well, we try to handwrite as much as we can. So, but clearly that made an impact, and we wanted to, treat that player with respect. And my eyes aren't good enough to see what that was. But we try to respond to everybody, and there's nothing better than a handwritten note.
I think you missed out on a great lefty.
I was so close. So close. Oh, man. Just play if I had played. Played a little better in the TO, Alan. If I'd have played a little better in the Texas-Oklahoma, I think I'd have had a chance.
I'm glad we played a part in kicking you into a great career, regardless of where it is.
No question about it. He, of course, is Alan Bratton with Oklahoma State. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Keep this Oklahoma State conversation going. Little Taylor Gooch, one of the best from Stillwater. So after the break, I guess he was a lock of the week for one of us at the table.
And he, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he's going to be on that notable graphic very soon. Mm. He is inching towards dominance.
My streak may be coming to an end.
And it's time for our lock of the week this week. And I'm going to say this right now. I mean, this is an absolute master lock. Lock of the week. Double lock the door.
Oh, no worries.
Deadbolt it closed. You're good to go. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
My lock of the week that can't miss, that will not miss. You know, Taylor Gooch.
Positive. Oh,
Taylor
Gooch. He had a great run at the players. I remember that. Yeah.
Taylor Gooch to make the cut is minus 264. He's making the cut. I mean, it's already done. It's been said.
Just go ahead and build the wing on the house. Done. I mean, it is done.
12 of 13 cuts made over his last 13 starts. 17 of 19 cuts made over his last 19 starts. He's played in this event twice. He's made the cut both times. He's one of the best players in the world right now. The way he's playing, the consistency that's there. He's making it Saturday. Come on.
I'm going to continue with the philosophy that has staked me to a 3-1 record.
Don't have to get fancy
with
this.
Don't get fancy, but I found another plus bet. So it's a little bit of risk involved. It's plus 280 for Tony Finau to finish in the top 10. This is Tony Finau. 280, who has 47 top 10 finishes in his PGA Tour career. Two of those at Mayakoba, where he has shot 65 before, and shot 66 before, and shot 67 before. One of those top 10s was last season, one of those top 10s was in his first. I just think that this is a guy that we know, he's on the golf course, is almost always likely to finish very, very well. I think top 10 Tony Finau, I think it's gonna be a nickname. Top 10 Tony Finau.
Every dynasty eventually ends. That's how sport works.
Yeah.
Can't have great things forever.
Patriots, Yankees, everybody. And everybody Damon, tastes pain.
And Damon Hacks, lock of the week.
But this was Shane Bacon come to life.
Well, I mean, what did I say in that
deadbolt, lock the door.
Just not, I mean, it wasn't going to miss. Open with 64. I have people texting me on Thursday that he's made the cut already. On Thursday, after that round.
It was a strong play. It was a strong look at a player who, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, is he one of the best players in the game? You said it, right? One of the best players in the game.
He's playing as good a golf as anybody in the world right now.
Okay.
He's inching closer and closer to the dub. How about Tony Finau, D?
My guy, top 10 TF. I mean, talking about one of the best players in the game, I was sure.
Mm-hmm.
He got the 5-under. Par 4, 9th, bird is the 11th hole, his approach shot. I mean, I was feeling pretty good for most of the first couple of days. The 18th hole got him. He bogeyed it one day. He doubled it his last one day on Saturday.
That was nice, though.
Yeah.
So I take the minus 264 here for Taylor Gooch. You took plus 280. You said it in that clip, a little bit more risk. I needed a win, D. I had to have a victory. I don't need people celebrating my lock of the win victory here. Let me give you an analogy. This is like returning from a 4-day bachelor trip in Las Vegas and someone praising the fact that you didn't party on Monday.
Okay.
You need a rest day.
No celebration. You're 2-3 now, but you're.
I needed that. I just had to find some sort of a lock, a win, a victory, anything I could find. I needed it, and I got to thank you, Taylor Gooch.
I'm 3-2. I still think I'm bringing value to the people. I'll bounce back. I may not learn ever how to smoke a cigar, but I will bounce back in our lock of the week this week.
So now you need a win, would you say, or?
Yeah, I can use. I want to fall to 500. Yeah. I want to stay above 500.
Are you going to be leaning towards maybe a minus number for your lock of the week? Are you still possibly gonna throw it out?
I was very jealous seeing your minus number come through. I think this might be a time for safety. This might be a time to kind of go for a player that I absolutely know will be there on the weekend, but I don't want to completely throw out the playbook.
Right, I understand.
It's working. I have a winning record. I'm an optimist by nature, so we'll see. I'll sit down with my people. We'll come up with something good for Wednesday.
I'm excited for Wednesday. We got a big show on Wednesday.
We do.
We got Paige McKenzie with us now.
We do.
Chat with Paige.
Absolutely.
She was throwing out some locks of the week, including, I believe you had a Taylor Gooch take as well, Paige.
I did. Mine were not locks. My betting advice or picks tend to have a little bit more value than what you're going for. You're shooting for singles. I'm maybe going for triples and home runs. And Taylor Gooch, I liked at a top five. He was plus 800. He was 8-1 for a top five. And I'll tell you why I liked him at that. 8 of his 9 top 10 career finishes at that point were actually also top fives. I felt like he was in good position all week to get it. And I know he was disappointed at how he ended his tournament because he was in that top five position until, yes, you see it, the double on 18. Mm. So, yes, Taylor Gooch, I'm sure, is somewhat disappointed to be walking away with a T11, as are anybody else that had money on him at a top five finish at plus 800.
It's a bad beat.
That's a bad beat. So you go from a top five to a top 10. That's no fun. How about Adam Long?
Outside of the top 10, right? I mean, outside the top 10.
Oh. That hurts my heart.
I know.
How about Adam Long? Adam, good guy. I walked a practice round with him for a couple holes at Wingfoot. What should we know about Adam Long?
Well, the reason why I had chosen him as one of my value picks is he had finished in the T2 and T3 the last couple of years that he played here. And I think it's important when you're evaluating your picks, you've got to look at where people are successful and why they're successful. If you look at the past champions at this golf course, El Camaleon, at Mayakoba, you'll see that driving distance is not as significant as some other events are, some other golf courses are. Victor Hovland, obviously, the last couple of years, he has pretty decent driving distance. But Brendan Todd, when he won in 2020, was 187th on the PGA Tour. Matt Kuchar, 135th. Patton Kizzire, 77th. So when I was evaluating Adam Long, was it a fluke the two previous years that he had top three finishes at 133rd in driving distance? I don't think so. And he walked away with a T22. So if you had him to make the cut, you would have gotten paid out.
Paige, you also you liked Aaron Wise this week. Where was your mind? Because Damon on Thursday, if you make birdie on one, I mean, Damon's writing it down as a dub. Aaron Wise opens with 63. Where were you at after that opening round?
I was feeling really good. And again, I mentioned this last week. The NBC Sports Predictor Edge had Aaron Wise with a really high finish. They had him at winning or second place. So I was already having my eye on him as to why that would be the reasoning. Well, he played well here. He was runner-up the year previous and then also was performing well leading into the event. He had some good top 10 finishes, two top 10 finishes leading into the event. And then you start diving a little bit deeper. And I think this is something to pay attention to. Maybe keep your notes for next fall wraparound season. Aaron Wise, in the 27 fall events that he's played in since he turned pro, he's had 12 top 25s and 6 top 10s. He's only had 13 career top 10s, but 6 of them, almost half of them, have come in the fall stretch portion of the season. So sometimes players do play well at certain times of the year, and Aaron Wise might be one of those players.
Paige McKenzie seeing the ball very well. I'm hurting a little bit after Tony Finau. You know, how excited are you about this week in Houston and bringing some more research to bear for the people at home?
This is my favorite portion of the show, guys. I know it might surprise a lot of people. I'm an LPGA player. I'm not actually allowed to be placing money anywhere, but I love to dig into the research. It just puts value on the actual analysis and research that I already always do. So I like to try to make some people some money. This week, I may have been able to get a few hits if you'd picked some top 20s and make the cuts. So I'll try to do the same again for this week.
Aaron Wise, in 4 starts in the fall, is 66 under par in four starts. He is trending. Paige, always trending. We appreciate the time, Paige. We'll check in with you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up next, the nine greatest golf shots out there, the nine best shots we've seen. They're gonna make it?
You know, our dog Skittles today stole some croissants off the table. My wife was so mad. But that's what animals do. You can't blame a monkey for being a monkey or a dog for being a dog.
They don't have a top to the basket for the bananas. They never thought to put some on top.
You got to put like a blanket on it or something. I mean, this is chaos. Back on Golf Today. Time now for the 19th hole. Our buddy Trevor Immelman, Masters champ, tweeted this out over the weekend. So actual conversation at dinner tonight. Me, I think I'm going to play the Masters next year. Son Jacob, you think you'll be able to caddy for me? Jacob says, I think I can handle two rounds, Pop. And so Trevor had the angry face emoji. But then this was the tweet this morning. Say, hey, left this on the kitchen counter next to the kids' school lunch as a reminder. Yeah, I won the Masters, little man.
Jacob. Might be headed to media because that's an incredible line. You know, I love the Psycho scorecard. You know, that's like kind of all over the place. Birdies, eagles, double bogeys. This is Nelly Korda sending this out. Satisfying and frustrating at the same time. This is the opposite of a Psycho scorecard. Hit every green, every fairway, two putts across the board, all pars, 36.
Wow, that's a clean card, though.
The full foul, though, is what I call that.
Wonderful.
Make a lot of pars.
Penmanship, too. Very, very strong from Nelly, who's now number one again in the world.
Yeah. Up to number one. We've got nine of the best shots of the week. D, you ready for these?
I'm always ready for the nine, especially great stories like this one. Stephen Auker, the Kiwi, making a move on PGA Tour champions in the 50 over set. That's the final hole, 18th, third from off the green, tapping birdie, would win by two. What a feeling just to kind of walk up there and know it is yours.
Got to be the best feeling in golf, in sport. How about this? Asia Pacific amateur, Nakajima, the number one amateur in the world, second playoff hole. Uh-huh.
Wow.
That's why you're the best in the game.
Wow. That is cool and quite a celebration as well. The number one, you want to see the number one. You want to see the best at their best and be their best, right? That's what we want.
How about this? This is number seven. This is when you pull out a snack, and you're not going to have that snack.
Security.
Through the ropes.
I'm thinking
of pass.
Bonquiqui.
No inside the ropes. Got to go back and get a banana for you.
Oh.
Look at that. Dedication. It's commitment.
Would you be nervous a little bit if the monkeys were just kind of running
around?
Yes. You would. Okay. Me too.
You got to get rid of that banana quicker than he did.
Got to.
But he held on it a little too long.
All right. Is this Lydia now? Saudi final round, ladies international.
Ooh, hooped it.
I mean, just she's got such grace to her. It's so nice to see her playing the type of golf that we were so long accustomed to seeing.
That was a 63 and a five-shot victory. We just showed you this, but it's worth showing to you again. Thomas Peters, Portugal Masters, fifth hole, another eagle in the nine. That time with the wedge.
I like that motion. I like that move. I'm someone who's working on that part of the game. That was sweet. Number four. How about a little more, Peters? This time on the green.
Yeah, just finishing your week off the right way. Had a couple putts. Didn't need them. Knocks that in. Walk off with another victory, a much needed victory. His fifth.
Winning feels good. It is important wherever you do it. Number three, Victor Hovland. Putting a lot of emphasis on the short game this week. Used to say his short game sucked. His words. Now he's saying, chipping is so good this past week in Mayakoba.
Just chop the legs out from a tight lie to a tucked flag. That'll win you golf tournaments with those hands.
Absolutely. This is the Mexico native Carlos Ortiz, who is my winner, who didn't win this week. Long par putt on his final hole. I mean, and drills it. Look at the crowds for Carlos. He said he's a little uncomfortable playing in his native Mexico in the past. Not so much anymore. Two runner-up finishes his last three starts in Mayakoba.
Solo second there with the long putt. A very solid week for Carlos Ortiz. But let's go to number one. I got a feeling what happens here, D.
John Ha. Got some history in Mayakoba.
dealing in golf I am not familiar with, but you are, Shane Bacon.
2021 has been very good to me. Did it go in? Did anybody see that? Did it go in the hole?
We asked this on social.
We just showed you some great golf shots. We're going to transition to some bad one. What is the worst golf shot that you've ever hit in your life? The worst. What was the scenario? Let's see if we got some responses. I think we do.
Asking people to be honest.
Oh, my main man, Maddie Blake. Member tournament, home course 18th approach shot after a big drive. All my buddies watching on deck overlooking 18. I sculled a 9-iron, which went screaming into the deck, nearly missing an elder. Legacy member. Can I tell you a quick Maddie Blake story?
Yeah.
He made a hole-in-one with me. He called the hole-in-one on the tee before he did it. We went out for an emergency 9.
Wow.
It went in Berry Hills, and he goes, I'm going to make a hole-in-one, and he made a hole-in-one.
So high point, the hole-in-one, low point, almost hitting an elderly Legacy member. You can kind of picture it, can't you? That's a scary situation.
I'm shocked that he's, you know, in media writing it like that.
Appreciate his honesty.
But
exactly.
Bradley.
Bradley playing with my future father-in-law for the first time. Just met him the day before. 185 out, hybrid 4, shank it dead right, conveniently where he parked the golf cart.
Ooh.
Almost took him out.
Almost hit the father-in-law.
That would have been
first
bad.
First time. You know what, Bradley? You're not getting the invite back to the golf course
either. The wedding might have been a little bit in jeopardy as well.
Luckily, it didn't hit him. I wonder how that turned out. Let us know, Bradley. How about Kevin? Caddy Day tournament with members. First tee right outside the golf shop. Dozens of people watching. I'm nervous. I swung way too fast. I whiff it, but the ball falls off the tee. That's like a comedy sketch. That's like a comedy. That's the golf comedy sketch, right?
Yeah.
You swing hard in the air, knocks it off the tee.
Quick story for me at the club the other day. I was practicing chipping, and I didn't hit a good one. And one of my buddies, Tom, remember, hey, you work at Golf Channel?
Oh, wow.
Like, easy, partner, easy.
I'm taking the day off
here. I'm working on some things. All right, what else we got here? This is Kurt. Worst shot I hit was a 90-degree shank. I'm on the tee box, swung at the ball, and shanked it 90 degrees to my right and bust a hole in the tee box. Sign. I wonder if you had to pay for that to replace that sign.
That's not good. That would be a bad golf shot.
It's embarrassing. This game. Oh,
we got more.
More?
Yeah, Chris hooked a tee shot on a par 3 onto a highway next to a golf course. It was my first shot of the day. And my dad didn't stop. I can't believe it's ever stopped as well as the next 10 years.
I thought you said, yeah, there you go, the next 10 years.
Yeah.
The next 17.
17 holes, 10 years, the rest of your life, you'll never not hear about that. My dad still tells a story about a friend of mine. Hit a drive on a par 4 years ago in Tucson. It gains 10 yards every story. The thing's gone like 700 yards at this point.
This golf gives us everything, doesn't it? Have my first round of the year, and I pull 4-iron off the tee. But he had two friends come I didn't know well. One of the friends whispers to him, 4-iron, really? He says, yeah, he can bomb it. I completely swing and miss, pulled my head and swung right over the top. Cried laughing. At least he had sense of humor.
Oh, man, I could read those for days. I mean, that's one of the great parts about golf is we can talk about the great golf shots we've hit and the unbelievable rounds, but that's where you really feel, you know, the nature and the environment of this sport is when you guys sit around and talk about how bad you can be at it.
That's the thing. I mean, no one wants to be embarrassed on the golf course, but I think, and I'm learning this, no one really cares. They'll poke fun of you, but everybody's favorite golfer is himself or herself. And everybody's worried about the state of their own game. So whether you're a 3 at home or a 30, don't worry about it. Play your own game. Stay in your own bubble. You be you. Everybody hits bad golf shots, even the best players in the world.
Yeah, Dustin Johnson, there's a quote floating around. It's always on social media if you open Instagram, talking about how many bad golf shots he hits. I hit the worst golf shots that you've ever seen. They're a good pal of mine, Greg Harmon, back in Mesa, Arizona. You know, he was kind of a touring pro for a number of years. And I remember him telling me one time, I hit 3 good golf shots around. I mean, this is a guy that never misses the center of the club face. This is a guy that's played in Phoenix Opens and Tucson Opens, and he's played in tours all across the world. He said, I hit 3 good golf shots around, that's it. The moment I heard that come out of Harmy's mouth, I myself reevaluated how I approach the golf game, because all you're trying to do is put it in a place to make par, and if you make a birdie, that's a bonus.
Yes.
I always play the game where I have to give myself a birdie putt. I'll be disappointed if I make par. To flip the mentality makes golf a lot easier.
In tournament golf, it kind of lulls the viewer into a sense that everybody out there is playing great golf, where you're usually seeing the leaders, you're usually seeing players hitting great shots. They're not all hitting great shots, I promise you that.
Can I give a shout-out to my mom? I asked her this morning,
Mom's rule.
Do you happen to have my old recruiting sheets? She found the Oklahoma State thing in about an hour.
It was a high point
of the show. Shout out Liza B.
Shout out, and Alan Bratton, you missed a great lefty at OSU.